This is The Guardian.
Just a warning before we start, this episode contains a description of domestic abuse. I'm Jane Lee, and this is The Full Story. For years, people all over the world have been sharing their stories of sexual abuse and harassment online with the words, Me Too.
Today is not a concert. It is not a parade, and it is not a party. Today is an act of resistance.
Social media is an important tool for the Me Too movement, amplifying support for victims and taking down powerful men in the court of public opinion. But in China, Me Too and feminism takes on a whole other meaning.
In Chinese, we call feminism as Ni Quan Zhu Yi. Feminism has two meanings, power and rights. But if you refer to power, it's a little bit sensitive in China. Good feminists would argue that, oh, we are not looking for power. But that's not true. If you have no power, how could you change the society?
Earlier this month, Chinese tennis pro Peng Shuai alleged on social media that the country's former vice premier had sexually assaulted her, an accusation the government has refused to respond to. Her post was censored, and then she disappeared from the public eye for nearly 3 weeks, and many feared the worst. After speaking with her on video chat, the International Olympic Committee says it now believes she's, quote, safe and well. Peng Shuai's story is just the latest in a series of high-profile cases to demonstrate the real dangers of speaking out about alleged sexual abuse in China. So how does the Me Too movement gain traction in a country where censorship is rife, the courts are closed to the public, and the right to protest is severely limited? Today, China's first Me Too case. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of November.
Ni hao ma.
Ni hao. Xiao ha.
So Helen, tell me about Zhou Xiaoxuan, better known by her nickname Xianzi.
Xianzi is a 28-year-old woman and is widely regarded as the face of the Me Too movement in China.
Helen Davidson is Guardian Australia's Taiwan correspondent.
I interviewed Xianzi recently with the help of a translator over Zoom.
Yeah, if there is anything that you don't want to talk about, then please just say so. It is your story to tell, so it is your decision.
Huh?
Okay.
What interested you in Xianzi and her story?
Xianzi's case is huge in China. It's been viewed as a landmark case by women who say they're victims of sexual harassment and victims of gender-based discrimination. And she's not just pushing back on entrenched sexism and tolerance of it in Chinese society. She's also challenging China's monstrous, opaque justice system and the power of China's elite and its government. I mean, this is an enormous fight for a 28-year-old woman.
Okay, so where does Xianzi's story begin?
Xianzi's story begins in 2014. She was a 21-year-old intern at a Chinese TV show, and she alleges that a state broadcasting host sexually harassed her when she went to his dressing room to try and interview him. She has accused him of forcibly groping and kissing her for almost an hour. She said that she was terrified. She didn't know what to do. She couldn't call for help. This broadcasting host was hugely famous in China. He's also a very politically powerful person. He holds positions in government. And so, you know, this was a very significant event for Xianzi. The TV host denies the accusations. He maintains he's completely innocent. But the day after the alleged attack, she did go to the police to report it. But she says that when she told them what had happened, their response was that he was a famous person of good reputation and he had what they called positive energy for the country. So that she should leave it alone, essentially. They told her to back off. The police also contacted her parents. So both her parents are Communist Party members and they have government jobs or government adjacent jobs. And the police warned them that their daughter shouldn't speak out because it might end up affecting their lives as well.
So did she end up filing an official report of her alleged abuse with the police?
No, she dropped her complaint and the TV host was never charged over the allegations. But then in mid-2018, a lot of women in China started sharing their own Me Too stories as part of the global movement. There are a lot of stories being posted on social media. So she saw that a close friend had posted her own account of her own harassment online. And so Xianzi decided to post hers as well, but as a sort of form of solidarity for her friend.
Back then, we still had that strong, shameful feeling. So when I saw her post, I told her that I think she is very brave. And I hope to write an article too, and to stay with her, to share with her the shame and support her. Just to let her know that what she wrote was not in vain. So I wrote an article, posted on my WeChat. It was 5 or 6 a.m. I published it, then it became viral. I did not expect that to happen.
然后这个时候就是，这是我没有预料到的。
Women started approaching Xianzhou online about their own stories and following her on social media networks in China, which she says has helped break down this social taboo of talking about sexual assault.
然后就问我就是她自己可以做什么，然后去帮助对方或者是怎么样。
They asked me how can they help and how can they speak up for gender inequality. The situation was not changed by only one person, but the whole Chinese society, especially young women, are changed by the Me Too movement. That reduced the guilty feelings of the victims. People are willing to speak publicly about what happened to them and share their experiences. Only the fact that we can discuss publicly, it is already very valuable. It not only can comfort other women, but also make the general public understand more the topic of sexual harassment and sexual assault. This is the most important thing. Young girls no longer feel guilty and shameful. They are willing to discuss.
年轻女孩不再以这个事情为羞耻，愿意去讨论它。
Organized protests are becoming increasingly difficult in China. Activists are under greater surveillance and they risk being arrested and questioned.
Due to the suppression of organized activism, organizers are invisible now.
Lu Pin is a Chinese feminist activist who's advocated for women's rights in China for over 20 years, so she's experienced these challenges firsthand. She's currently based in New York, but she's closely observing China's Me Too movement from there.
You cannot just organize a high-profile campaign for the moment. That's very risky in the political environment now. So now the leader of the movement are victims like Xianzhi.
She says Xianzi's story is one of the few cases of sexual harassment in China to become well known, mainly because it was able to escape the government's strict censors.
And people were shocked that, oh, a so famous host did that to a young woman. So people could not stop talking about it because they were shocked, because they were angry.
Unlike other posts which routinely disappear from the internet, millions of people made copies of Xianzi's original post, and they kept reposting it until there were just too many to be taken down. But it's rare for these kinds of allegations to go viral in China.
Yeah, because if your story cannot gather millions of people in one day to repost for you, your voice cannot be heard. So many victims cannot be heard now, but only few victims can be heard. So now we only know some most influential cases.
Xianzhi's story was really heartfelt. It was very harrowing, and it came along at a moment when women in China were trying to light a fire under the Me Too movement in their own country. There'd been such a strong fight for feminism and against gender-based discrimination and violence in China, but so little support from authorities and from the justice system. Since then, there have been a number of other high-profile Me Too cases in China. There was the pop star Chris Wu, who's been charged with rape, which he denies.
We've never seen a figure as prominent as Chris Wu before detained, and so it's definitely a big victory for the feminist movement.
There's a massive case in the news recently. So one of China's biggest sporting stars, a doubles tennis pro, Peng Shuai, she's alleged online that the former vice premier, Zhang Gaoli, had sexually assaulted her. Her post was almost immediately taken down off the internet. This is the highest profile accusation in all of China's Me Too accusations. It's huge. Chinese government representatives have not responded to these allegations, and nor has the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which says it's not a diplomatic matter. Tennis stars and feminist groups became concerned about her safety when she wasn't seen or heard from publicly for almost 3 weeks after she made those allegations on Weibo.
We are deeply concerned by reports that Peng Shuai appears to be missing after accusing a former PRC senior official of sexual...
And now, even though the International Olympic Committee says that she's safe and well, we still don't know whether she's being detained. The Women's Tennis Association says it's still concerned about her well-being and her ability to communicate without censorship or coercion. And there are still the questions around demands for an investigation into her allegations in the first place.
The Women's Tennis Association said the video alone was not enough proof of Shuai's well-being.
So there are still a lot of answers remaining, and this is still an ongoing story that we should be keeping an eye on. But back in 2018, none of these allegations were public, and Xianzhi's story was the first one in the Me Too movement. So I think this felt like a really strong moment, and her story came along at the right time to, you know, galvanise people around it.
So Helen, as you mentioned, the TV host has never been charged over Xianzhi's sexual harassment allegations. But what happened after her story went viral?
Well, not long after her story went viral, things got a little messy. The TV host sued her in October 2018, arguing that she had defamed him with her article, and he was seeking damages of around $100,000. In return, Xianzhi fought back. In January 2019, she countersued the TV host for, quote, violation of personality rights.
What does that mean, violation of personality rights?
Yeah, it's a strange term. It's quite vague. At the time, it was a term in Chinese law which referred to breaching a person's right to health and to dignity. And at that time, it was the only real recourse for victims of sexual harassment to sue their alleged attacker. There wasn't any other law that they could pursue.
What's been the TV host's response to the media on these allegations against him?
The Guardian has tried to contact him, other outlets have tried to contact him, but he's not speaking to anyone publicly, either through his lawyers or personally. But his defamation case against Xianzhi is still ongoing. He's still claiming defamation, he's still seeking damages. So we don't know when or if that's going to go to court, but it is still active.
Okay, so it sounds like the TV host's defamation case against Xianzhi is still ongoing. But what about Xianzhi's case against him for violation of personality rights?
The case had a lot of delays and nothing really happened for years. But then in 2020, China introduced a new article into its civil code. So that's a law that regulates a range of areas in private life like marriage and property. This new article introduced the concept of sexual harassment into the code, clearly prohibiting it in legislation for the first time. It says that a person may be held liable for speech, words, images, or bodily actions that have been used to carry out sexual harassment against a person's wishes. So this is a really big moment for people trying to get accountability for sexual harassment in China. And it also comes after public comments by China's president, Xi Jinping, who said last year at a UN conference that the protection of women's rights and interests, quote, must become a national commitment. And while it holds institutions and businesses responsible for preventing and dealing with sexual harassment, it doesn't actually lay out any guidelines for enforcement. So while that's a positive move, people point out that there's still a really long way to go.
We just have one single sentence in civil code. We don't have definition of sexual harassment yet. It just mentioned that sexual harassment is forbidden in China. That's all.
Helen, did this addition of sexual harassment to China's civil code help Xianzhi's case?
Once the new code is passed, Xianzhi actually petitions the court. She wants to refile her case under this new law, specifying that she's been sexually harassed under this new legislation. But the court denies it, and so she has to keep pursuing the claim, but under her original suit of claiming a violation of personality rights.
Okay, so she continues on with her original legal claim. What happens next?
So a year later, in September 2021, Xianzhi was called back to court, where she heard that they were dismissing her case, claiming that it did not meet the standard of proof to show that her boss had sexually harassed her.
So after 3 years battling her alleged abuser in court and building this huge online community of Me Too supporters who are following her story really closely, her case is dismissed for lack of evidence. How did Xianzhi respond to this loss and what did she say to her supporters about it?
She thanked them for their support. She pledged that she would appeal. And she included a list of criticisms of the judgment and process. So this included her concerns that she hadn't been allowed to introduce bits of evidence, that the court had refused to demand other pieces of evidence like video footage from CCTV near his room. And so without this, she said that, you know, she wasn't able to produce the evidence that was needed to bring her case to the strength that was required. She wrote, "Failure is not shameful, and I am honoured to have stood with you together in the past 3 years. Thank you very much, everyone. I will definitely appeal. And when I interviewed her recently, she told me that she and her lawyers were working every day on this appeal for her case.
我们是想就是穷尽所有的努力，然后去看，就是在一个。What we want to do is to do as much as we can in terms of what we can do within the legal system. We want to do everything and all to see how much effort a sexual harassment case needs to give and how much result we can get in the end. We must do all we can do. This is a responsible way to face the public and everyone who cares about me.
Lupin, in Australia and in the US, only a small minority of sexual assault allegations tend to make it all the way through the court system, and that's both in civil and criminal cases. Is that a similar situation in China?
We don't have data to describe the whole picture of victims' experience when they go through the system. But we have a lot of examples to show that the legal system, is very unfriendly to women.
Can you expand on that a little bit? What do you mean by that?
And people say that when they went to the police station asked that, did you have a boyfriend? Have you have sexual experience? Why did you go out with strangers?
So what happened after Xianzi posted her message to her followers at the end of her court case?
That was one of her last posts on Weibo, China's Twitter equivalent, because the day after the court handed down its decision, she found that her account on the site had been shut down.
包括开庭之后，我其实是没有任何的渠道，就是在网络上面，就是在进行发言。
After the trial, I don't have any access online to speak. The only ones who can speak are the other side. They spread so many things that were not true. It is a feeling from 2014. People tell you that you are not important and you should shut up. Like, I'm not someone who lost the trial in a sexual harassment case, but I'm a criminal. Everything I did was a crime. When I spoke up for myself and shared my experience, you are a criminal that should not speak. This feeling is indeed torturing.
And is this common in China, that people's accounts get shut down without any warning or any reason?
Yeah, this is a very common thing that happens in China, particularly with accounts owned by people who are seen as activists.
Next, how the Me Too movement gets past China's censors.
I believe that many women are already silenced before they can make their voices be heard.
Lupin has experienced China's censors firsthand. Her own website, Feminist Voices, a network for advocates, was shut down some years ago.
Our government had a very advanced technique to support their censorship system. They have keywords censorship.
This is a system where China's censors can identify key words you've typed, for example, on a messaging app to your friend, and censor them so that those words don't appear in the app once the message has been sent.
When you are posting your information to the internet, before you can post it, you have to go through the mechanism of keyword. So if your post cannot go through that system, people cannot read it. You cannot read it by yourself. And sometimes you will just lost your account before you can say anything to others.
What are some of the key words?
That's a state secret. You cannot know that. You have to guess.
And, you know, what impact does this broad censorship policy have for women, but also for the broader Me Too movement in China?
You know, many women, especially victims, silenced, so people they cannot make their voices be heard by the public. Another thing is that people cannot connect with each other and support each other. So the network, the supportive network of women was cut down, is cut down by the censorship. So victims and women are isolated from the support they deserve. And the important thing that you cannot organize a movement without the connection of the people. Yeah, so I think that's a major goal of the censorship, to prevent people from organizing and empowering themselves to fight for their rights. That's a major function of the censorship.
Lu Pin says that censorship is blocking the progress of Me Too in China because it's stifling public debate.
Feminism is not strong enough to change the social and political environment, although we are trying, but it's hard. It's extremely hard. The system is much stronger than us.
I think the key difference for the Me Too movement in China is just the incredible level of difficulty to speak about it publicly. Xianche's case and that of other feminist activists in China has shown us that if you want to speak publicly about an incident of sexual harassment or just generally about issues of gender equality or violence against women, that there is an incredible pushback, particularly online, particularly from nationalist trolls. There's very strong feelings of nationalism on Chinese social media, and it's something that's growing really strongly. You know, feminism is talked about as something that has been introduced by the US or other foreign powers as a destabilizing element in China, and that it's not actually a problem. That activists are essentially anti-China, acting as foreign agents. But then there is also so many structural barriers as well, like, you know, the actual censorship of their accounts and the censorship of their conversations. I mean, for all its faults in other places, and we've seen really high-profile cases fall over for various reasons in other countries, people have still been able to take their story on a public platform and still been able to share their experiences and to advocate for improvements to the system generally. That, I think, is the key difference in China, and that it is so, so difficult to be able to do anything at a level that reaches sort of a national or international audience.
The public opinion, the attacks indeed bothered me. It is not a threat. Those people who attack me online probably would not dare to hurt me offline. But it is more like an emotional attack. People humiliated me like a slut and even said I was involved in a foreign power. They attack me personally, but for me, the more hurt I am, the more I want to insist on things. The more challenges I face, the more it proves that the obstacles that we face are meaningful. It is more meaningful to work hard in this bad situation.
If we didn't have so active feminist movement, we won't say so. anti-feminist movement.
Lu Pin says that as Chinese society becomes increasingly authoritarian, she's seeing more nationalist supporters of the Chinese Communist Party targeting feminist activists online.
I won't say that they are directly working together with the government. That's not true. But what I can say that they share same ideology, misogynist ideology with the government.
Misogynist ideology.
Yes, yes. They can't say anything against us. We cannot fight back. That's an unfair battle.
I mean, how do Chinese activists like yourself navigate these policies to keep getting their message across and to keep debating within China?
Well, the only thing you can do is to keep trying.
This means that when your social media account gets blocked, you start a new one, maybe even a series of new accounts. And when your post gets taken down, you put another one back up again. And when that fails too...
If we cannot write articles for the public, we use pictures, we use posters, we use podcasts, we use videos.
When you say pictures, what kind of pictures do you post?
We have a feminist artist. Created a lot of cartoons for our movement. You should concentrate all information in one picture. So it's easy to post and easy to be shared.
Can you give me an example of a picture that's been shared a lot in support of the feminist movement?
Last year, a Tibetan woman was burned to death by her ex-husband in her own home. That was so sad.
The woman was set alight while she was live streaming to hundreds of people on social media. Earlier this year, her Chinese ex-husband was sentenced to death for her murder. The case sparked online debate about stronger divorce and domestic violence laws in China. The woman had previously reported her ex-husband's abuse to the police, but they failed to act.
So I designed a poster with a picture of her and a small slogan to remember her and to tell people that the inaction is a major cause of her tragedy. And that poster was shared for millions of times on the internet.
China's feminist movement is a deeply personal one for Lu Pin. In 2015, she travelled to New York to attend a United Nations conference on women's rights. A day after she landed, she learnt that some of her colleagues back in China had been arrested by the police. She thinks this happened because they were planning to try to raise awareness about sexual harassment on public transport. This wasn't officially a protest, which she says is effectively banned in China. The women were just planning to talk to passengers and bus drivers and hand out flyers about sexual harassment. Lu Pin was the women's mentor, and she helped to plan the campaign.
That incident forced me to leave, to cancel my ticket going back to China. And I have been staying here for 6 years.
So what ended up happening to your colleagues, do you know?
Yeah, they were arrested. They were arrested and been detained for 1 month. But after 1 month, yeah, with the support from the Chinese public and the international society, they were released. And now all of them are still very active to work for women's rights in China.
So being in the US now, how do you observe the differences and the similarities between the Me Too movements playing out in China and in the US at the moment?
The Me Too movement rose in America because they thought that the legal system against sexual harassment is not enough here. But in China, basically, we don't have legal system addressing sexual harassment yet. And in China, the vast majority of participants of Me Too movement in China are ordinary people. I mean, the Me Too, in America, many big stars also participate in that movement. That's not the case in China. And the major resources of the movement comes from ordinary people, not from the organization, not from the professional people, because, you know, in China, there are no enough resources. The movement in China relies on the unpaid labor of its participants.
And so, you know, with all of the barriers that we've talked about and all the things that make it hard for Me Too to progress in China, what do you think has really changed in recent years in terms of women's rights?
I cannot say that Me Too movement make a dramatic change. You know, the society is gradually changing. But before the movement, we didn't have a so broad feminist community. Now we have millions of people identifying themselves with feminism. Before three years ago, it was unimaginable.
Unimaginable.
Yeah. I cannot say Me Too has greatly changed the government, nor has it greatly changed the public. But I can say that Me Too has greatly changed young women themselves.
I mean, it's hard to predict, but what do you expect to see going forward in this space in China?
We cannot expect that feminism can change this country. That's my dream, but now I know that it's unrealistic to expect feminism to change this country.
Helen, you've spoken to a number of activists. What have they said about how they're feeling about the future of the Me Too movement and feminism more broadly in China?
I think people are watching Xianzhi's case and other really high-profile cases really closely to see if, you know, given the social activism on sexual abuse is being hampered, will the Chinese government decide to step in and improve all these aspects of the justice system to make sure that sexual abuse allegations, both civil and criminal, and the people who bring them, are treated seriously by police and the courts? I don't think we've seen that yet, but it's something that people like Xianzhi are watching pretty closely.
But I'm not sure how long it can last. The case will eventually end one day. We already had no space and were not permitted to discuss it in public. And it will get smaller in the future. So it is no longer up to how long will you persist, but it is actually up to how much space do you have to be permitted to discuss it. I think this is the challenge we have now. The case will end one day, but we do not know if we will be permitted to discuss the topic in the future. But no matter if it is permitted or not, and no matter how cruel it looks on the internet, I'm very sure that there will still be many women who keep standing up and sharing their experience of sexual assault. There are so many sexual assault victims, and it is so painful. No matter how hard the external situation is, there will still many women decide to speak up for themselves.
Lu Pin says she's happy that women in China are now speaking up about sexual abuse, but she doesn't seem to share Xianzi's optimism about the future of the Me Too movement there. Do you feel like you'll ever return home?
It's a privilege living in your own country. It's a privilege to live in your own homeland without concern about security. But many people have forcefully left their homeland and moved to another country. I'm just one of them. But thanks for the internet and help of my friends with living within China, I can still work together with them. I can still contribute my energy to the movement as long as I want.
Thanks to Guardian reporter Helen Davidson and activists Xianzi and Lu Pin for their time. Thanks also to Summer Lin Qihui, who translated Xianzi's interview and voiced her responses for us in English. You can read more of Helen's reporting on China's Me Too movement on the Guardian website. I'll put some links up on the full story page. This episode was produced by myself, Ellen Liebeder, Alison Chan, and Laura Murphy-Oates. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannon. Full Story's executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and Laura Murphy-Oates. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.